The end is near. Yeah. Thank you so much. This is our round table discussion. As you can see, we do not have a round table, but we will have a discussion. And when we first thought about how we are going to do this, we wanted to call this Challenge the Keynote. And then it materialized that out of our three keynotes, there would only be one keynote left at this point in the conference to be challenged. So we thought, that's not fair. Poor Mark is with us until the end, and then he gets challenged on his own. So we have a panel of people as a result of it, so that Mark is not alone, and each and everyone can be challenged. So can I kindly ask you to come to the front? Phil, Françoise, Christy, Fergal, and Mark, please. Yeah. Please say, once you get started, when I shut up, that is, say who you are and where you are from very quickly. And what we've asked these nice colleagues to do is to give us 2-minute sound bites on the following questions. Maybe just one question, maybe two questions, maybe they will manage to address all three of them in their 2-minute sound bite. They don't have to, okay? Question number one was, is there something like sustainability in coal? Can we future-proof coal? Next question. What new trends have you seen emerge during this year's conference? Third question, is there a balance? Have you seen a balance between research, development, and practice during this conference? So they will either address each of these or just one question. Over to you.
Stanford University in the USA. Which question? I wouldn't call this a trend exactly, but I saw more of something that I think we need even more of, and that was meta-analyses or systematic reviews. I saw one on virtual worlds, virtual reality. I saw one on mall, and I saw part three, I guess the third movement of John Gillespie's magnum opus, kind of on the field of call as a whole, is seen through analysis of four journals. Besides that, in terms of this concept of future-proofing, our late and greatly missed colleague Stephen Bax, 15 years ago, wrote famously that the goal of call should be to make itself obsolete. And what we have instead is a conference theme devoted to the idea of systematically trying to avoid obsolescence. That's what future-proofing is. I think it's very healthy for the call world that we continue to try to see that we have relevance. The concept of call in particular as a field is something that is constantly, I would say, under attack administratively, as well as even from people within the field. They see the term as being obsolete itself. So keep calling.
Okay, I'm a bit challenged before you challenge me, because I have a sore leg today, so I have a chair there when it gets a bit too hard. Trends, I'm not going to answer that one. The questions that really caught me was, is there something such as sustainability in coal? And my answer is, there should be, but we need to understand what we mean by sustainability, because sustainability is often understood as maintaining something, prolonging it. But for me, and for other people in the audience I know, it's about transformation, it's about change, it's about meeting the present and future needs of language teachers and learners. So it's not about continuing the same thing over and over again. So, and I make the link with, I'm not going to talk about, you know, I'm hijacking the questions, actually, about the balance between research, development, and practice. I think sustainability cannot be seen as research on one hand, development on another, and practice as a three discrete components. I think they have to be integrated. I think they have to be seen as even nested, that you cannot talk about sustainability without linking, integrating the three together from the start of a project, from the start of a new initiative, and that's what I would like to say.
I have two. Wow, lucky me. Am I going to talk like that? And you see, I start moving. For those of you being yesterday present at the dinner, I will start doing some movements because that's something like me. Christy without movement, without expression is not Christy. So I will be walking around. I have been focusing on the question on about future proof. And I think there are many people saying that we are in the middle of technological revolution, that change, the speed of change will evolve very quickly. How can we say within coal that coal is future-proof? That's the great question. New trends are coming, new approaches are coming, new developments, new tools. And these innovations might have an effect on the way we communicate and on our understanding of what call is, of what language teaching is. Okay, so future proof. On the other hand, call, is about innovation. Call is about change. Call is about evolution. So it is on the DNA. Do you say DNA? ADN? DNA. Of call. So we are working on that. So are we future proof? Could be. And what does make us future proof? And this is related to sustainability. And I think that is the integration of reflective practice and research. And that's something that Eurocall has been doing and promoting from the very, very, very beginning. And that's something that we have been seeing here. New trends, virtual reality, augmented reality, and artificial intelligence. I think that we are going to see many things in the future. I have to stop. Challenge two. That's nice.
Okay, apparently we're skipping one. So my name is Fergal Carlin, and I'm actually from this university. I'm an English teacher in the Language Centre, so blame Peppy for my presence here. And maybe I'll be coming at this from a slightly different point of view in that this is my first call conference, so everything is new for me. And actually, when I was looking at the questions, the one that pops out to me as well is this future proof. And it reminds me as a young Irishman growing up in Ireland. And, it rains pretty much 90% of the year. And where you'd be going to buy a new phone and it advertises itself as waterproof. And anybody who's been to Ireland will know that nothing is waterproof. So I was thinking, is the term itself future-proof something? It gives me this idea of something to be sold. It's something we need to buy into, and I'm quite skeptical towards the kind of term itself in that way. Can we future-proof anything? Perhaps not, because can we legislate for the future? I would argue no, because, you know, there could be a financial crash tomorrow and we lose our funding for developing our app or our whatever it is we're working on. But coming back to my experience here, you know, some of the talks that I've enjoyed the most this week have been where people have really just shared, like, this is what we did, and this is what went wrong with it. And it just really, I thought, it shows a certain humility, and it's something that we can really learn from, or at least me as a young teacher at the beginning of my career, it's something that I can really learn from. And I think that's what will really give us that balance that we mentioned earlier on. If we continue that dialogue, that sharing of ideas, the sharing of mistakes that we've made, I think that I was expecting coming into these talks to be like, this is the technology I used, and this is why it's amazing. And, you know, a kind of a sales pitch. And I think future-proofing is something that is essentially a little bit of a sales pitch. So I would say, can we future-proof things? Perhaps not. But we can keep in contact with each other. We can build up a network of contacts, and we can learn from each other and keep improving call, basically.
In some respects, future-proofing or sustainability, we have evidence of it here, because one of the elements of sustainability is the vibrancy and health of one's professional community and the way in which you're able to reproduce that community and reproduce in a positive sense. And thus, and I particularly pick up on the point, not reproduce to do what we've always done before, but the vibrancy and the membership is very important. So that would be my first point in relation to probably future-proofing, is the health of your professional body. And from this conference, it seems to be very healthy as a newcomer to the community. The second point I'd make around future-proofing would be really around, you may recall I talked about an ecological kind of metaphor or perspective. Now, these things always break down if you take a purely biological view or an evolutionary view, but just in a broad sense, as a metaphor, the more innovation you embrace, a culture of innovation on the edge, that's going to give you an adaptation value in terms of what's coming next, that you might be swept to one side, but your propensity to be able to adapt depends on that level of innovation. So I hope that kind of makes sense. And in many respects, at an institutional level, you have to find ways of embracing innovation structurally, because even if we do want to borrow from the business world, it's well accepted that it's extremely hard to innovate in mainstream business in a bit of commerce. So an example of this at DCU is we've created the Ideas Lab in parallel to what we do with our BLE or LMS, so that we can separate these two parts, and the Innovations Lab has got a remit to innovate.
Good. Thank you. Now over to you. Yeah, let's give them a round of applause. Yeah. 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 This is the mic for the audience. Does anyone have a thought, an idea, contribution, a question? Please. Who wants to start?
Let's keep this civilized.
Yeah. Are you all stunned into silence now? Well, for me, I make a start then. I'm totally convinced by what I hear about the need to have an institutional structure that supports innovation and even networking. But at the same time, there are still a lot of us individual, often maybe even quite lonely champions at their institutions who are trying to practice call. And this is why I think we as an association are so important, because at least once a year we offer the opportunity to come together and find the like-minded and engage in a little bit of think tank type of activity to push boundaries. And then in that sense, I think the association is definitely sustainability. And having listened to you, I think future-proof, maybe we don't need it in the sense that you said we don't need to sell ourselves. It is obvious what we are doing works. We've been doing it for many, many years now, and we will continue to do it for many more years. Just an observation. Thank you. You want to? Yeah, Anna. Can I? Come on.
Okay, that was...
Hello.
I think so. Just as a thought, since Claire had to leave, but I was just, and she may have said this to some of you as well, but I asked her if this was her first time at Eurocall, and it was. And I said, well, you know, what do you make of it? And she said, well, from having been to several presentations, it seems to me that part of what you're trying to do here is to solve problems defined by others. So you're, you know, in this case, using technology to try and solve the problems that are being defined by others and not by you. And maybe you should think more in terms of, you know, how you define the problems and what problems are important for you, regardless of what others think the main problems to be solved are. I'm simply repeating what she said, so it's her comment, not mine, and I'm certainly not in no position at all to comment on that, but I just thought it was interesting food for thought, because sometimes having somebody who comes from the outside, you know, and who sees, you know, and just gives you a first impression, it can be quite stimulating in terms of thinking, oh yeah, I hadn't seen that, you know, I'm so involved in the conversation that, you know, perhaps taking that step back and thinking what are the problems that we think are important rather than the problems that others think are important that we should solve.
I'm happy to just elaborate on that as someone else who's new to, and I guess with fresh eyes. So what I would say is I would think of those problems, and this sounds a little trite, but at the micro, meso, and macro level. So my observation would be that many of the problems, I did hear people talking about the problems that they have at the micro level and to a lesser degree at the meso level, the institutional type level. Probably I didn't hear as much at the macro level, but I think we have to be respectful that those are all problems. They are interrelated, and maybe that's more the observation I want to make, is the connection between the problem at the micro level is part of a subset of usually a bigger problem, and understanding how they connect.
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing as well that I think I would like to add. It's about the relationship between the future, the present, and the past, because very often we have this tendency of saying, you know, we're preparing for the future, but I think the future can tell us about the present as well. And for those of you who read J.A. Lemke, for instance, I mean, he has developed a lot these concepts of heterochrony, where the future actually influences the present. And I think maybe what we need, the problem for us is to identify problems, whether they come from outside or from us. The big question in research is to formulate an ill-defined problem, because I think that's the competency, the major skills that graduate students get, you know, what you can bring to a lot of sphere in business, anywhere else, and we can't always sell very well, is this ability to tackle an ill-defined problem, wherever it comes from. And I think the trend, it's not a trend yet, but we've seen a lot of work on the use of complexity theory, chaos theory, systemic theories, where really you look at what happened in the future, you go backwards rather than, you know, making hypotheses and about the future and so on. So it's looking, trying to understand what's happened by, you know, starting from a point in time and tracing it back. And I think maybe that's what we need to look a bit more as well. You know, the future proofing, it's maybe going backwards. I'm not sure I'm very clear, but think about it.
There's a concept called backtasking there. If you start what you want and you put it back.
Backtasking.
Instead of forecasting.
Forecasting was the thing I was.
Anybody else?
Yeah, well, maybe, and I think that's really a very, very interesting point, because I was talking to her as well, and I heard this, and I think that we are not aware. For instance, I am working since 2005 on telecollaboration, and at the very beginning, I knew perfectly why I was engaging in telecollaboration and doing research into telecollaboration, right? Because you saw what the problems were in the classroom setting. But then you go to the conference, to a conference, and you don't start saying what the problems are in the classroom setting. And I can understand that somebody coming from outside the community, that she's missing this very, very relevant information. So maybe we should be looking at what we do from an outsider perspective as well. And maybe we need to replicate or repeat the problematic aspect of the classroom teaching situation. I don't know, but it was a very good point. Yeah.
Anybody else? Questions?
I'm dying to this, so please put your hand up. I just throw it. Whoever catches it has to.
If I could add a little bit to that as well, because this is something that popped into my head actually earlier today when I was sitting in one of the talks this morning, is that adding on to what you say about where are we getting our information from? I think, you know, in the university here recently, we've been talking about, like, what will the student of the future? What will their skill set be? What will they need to get from us in order to survive in university? And obviously, what kind of digital skills will they already have, and what do we need to acclimatize them to? And a lot of the materials that we looked at, because, I mean, maybe it was the only thing we could see that written in an academic context, was a lot of it came from the kind of financial sector. And maybe that's not the best place for us to look for this information. I mean, earlier on in the conference, people were talking about, you know, the differences between, like, practitioners and various other kind of roles, how you see yourself. And the fact is that, you know, if you ask us all to label ourselves here, I'm sure, yeah, we would all see ourselves as strong in one particular thing. And if we can kind of get those practitioners to help us out when it comes to... because... I'm sorry, this is a little incoherent. So one of the issues that people mentioned repeatedly throughout the conference was that they had these ideas and they were struggling to put it into practice. And I think, like, when we're designing these platforms, we're a little bit in our own bubble, like we are in the academic life in general. And, you know, sometimes it's as simple as going and grabbing a bunch of your students and bringing them in and sitting them down with whatever you're working on and just asking them to, you know, try and use this for this purpose and see what the outcome is. And maybe, if nothing else, it'll just refresh your batteries and make you think about something in a slightly different way. But, yeah, my main message is to maybe diversify where your information comes from a little bit more.
Sorry, I just want to ask a question, ask the panel a question. I don't know whether you attended the what you call the magnus opus, the presentation by John Gillespie.
Is it back over there?
Which is, yeah. I really enjoyed your presentation. I thought it was very inspiring, because it's a great summary of fields within CALL that remain underdeveloped. And there was a couple of slides about the field seems to have narrowed in terms of research and publications over the years. And there was also a slide about topics that were underpublished. For instance, pedagogy. I'm just wondering whether it is our sort of responsibility to address that rather than just sort of look at it and say, okay, so this is the state of coal in 2000.
I didn't attend the session, so I'm not really that in a position to comment, other than something I would alert you to in a gap in most fields where there's innovation involved. And a really nice article in the Journal of Educational Studies by Philip Dawson and colleague came out last year that identified in educational research publications the positive reporting bias. And in other words, failures don't get published. And so even systematic lit reviews, which I do have a little bit of a problem with because it's quite a mechanistic approach if you don't have a theoretical framework in how you interpret the literature, but we don't get to see what really is going on where failure is perhaps the norm rather than the exception. But you heard what I said about embracing failure, that great quote from Samuel Beckett, fail, fail again, fail even better.
I did go to it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I would say that one of the reasons we have gaps in research, or one of the reasons I think sometimes we have a lot more research in one area than some other, is simply because some things are easier to research, and we go for the low-hanging fruit. In the early days of CMC, you went from having to, if you wanted to do a conversation analysis or anything like that, you would have to record spoken words, transcribe them. And when you were doing synchronous chat, it was all there already. All your data was just sitting there, at least until people like Brian Smith started talking about all the data that wasn't there. But there was enough there that you could crank out an analysis. You could say, here's negotiation of meaning going on. And because some things are easier to do research in, you can get your papers out faster. What I would like to see with some of these gaps that would be journals pushing for special issues to fill those gaps and themed conferences, or at least themes within conferences that try to fill them.